Hey everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, which is brought to you every Friday afternoon now on KCRW. And as promised last week, we have here with us as a guest here in KCRW, no stranger to KCRW, Dr. Philip Proctor.
Thank you, Dr. Bob, and it's very nice to be back in the newly refurbished and expanded studios. I particularly like the air conditioning, the new air conditioning
unit. It looks like something out of Brazil.
These are the few times that I wish that radio had eyes and people could share it with us. It looks like one of those fun rides that you can put small innocent children on. You know, it's like a big striped snake that you can drop them in and then they can bounce for an hour while you go out and drink.
It reminds me of the ducks from Brazil.
Yes, it is. It's like Brazilian ducks. I think you can't hunt Brazilian ducks anymore because, right,
they don't swim.
So they don't swim, that's right. It's not very sporting.
Anyway, those of you who are totally illiterate might not realize the fact that Philip Proctor was exactly 25% of a marvelous group by the name of Firesign Theater, who initially came to prominence in about 1967,
right around there.
And were pretty much an annoyance to the powers that be for about 10 years or so.
I think really, about 15, really, we kind of caused problems, you know, with a few breaks in between, you know.
And Firesign Theater is still somewhat in existence.
Yeah, somewhat. We're scattered. We're somewhat scattered. Our forces are scattered, but of course we can wreak havoc in more subtle ways that way. Dave Osman is working for National Public Radio, and he's up in the Seattle area on an island up there, you know, waging the war of the words. And Phil Austin also, ironically, has bought a house that his family, his wife's family, owned up in the Seattle area, and he's up there typing his fingers to the bone, writing apparently a screenplay for The Grateful Dead and John Candy, not necessarily in that order. And then Peter Bergman is down here hustling his buns, trying to get into television again. And also he's doing a radio show on a sister listener-sponsored station.
We can say KPFK.
Can you say KP?
Yes,
I didn't think you could say F-K on the radio.
Yes, we can.
But we can, all right. So everybody, in a way, is still subversive, you see. And I, of course, I'm selling you a worthless automobile insurance on television at every given day of the night and whatever. I actually like the company because they're consumer oriented, and so that, you know, I try to identify myself since I have sold in.
Yeah, you really don't have to justify it, really.
It's
all right. No,
thank God.
It's okay. We forgive you.
Yes, it is. You see this nice jacket?
Yeah, they bought that.
That's right.
Well, anyway, you are no stranger to KCRW. Anyone that had the good fortune to be tuned in during our pledge drive heard you screaming at them for about 10 days.
Well, yes, except when I was on with Ruth.
Yeah.
It was a tremendous experience, and it was,
She's out of town now, so you can say what you want.
No, I love Ruth. Ruth was responsible for allowing me to come down and you know, share the experience and to get to meet everybody and not just listen to them and to participate and play and be the court jester, and I loved it.
Well, you made it a lot of fun, and there was a wonderful Firesign Festival that aired every night at 10, and my favorite moment, and I've heard this from a number of people, that their favorite part in the Firesign Festival came towards the end when John McNally started asking you about the Firesign Theater.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it had to be interrupted every 15 seconds with somebody yelling in the phone number.
Batter up!
Yes.
Let's pitch!
Yes.
That's
so
right.
So now that we're not doing that, the number to call is... now that we're not doing that, I thought it might be interesting. It might not. We will soon find out. To hear a little bit of the history of such a landmark group. And I mean, a very key part.
I think of it as more of a landmine group, actually, you know.
You guys were a major part of the counterculture of the 60s and the early 70s in this country. And
Much to our own surprise, I may add. Well, I guess that stopped you, didn't it? Much to our own surprise, we never intended to be a voice for the counterculture. And yet that's what happened. What we really wanted to do, we didn't know what we wanted. We wanted to have a good time on records because we found that the thing that the four of us had in common when we all came together was a love of radio, because we'd met on radio on KPFK when Ruth was actually working at the station. I think she was janitor that time. Anyway, we started doing the show on
the toilets on, have never been as clean.
No, they haven't.
Since
have you noticed that? I know.
They miss her there.
I know they do, but you know she's got the key to her own special toilet here, and it's spick and span.
They save her bandana for her, hoping she will come back.
Come back. That's right. Ruth's bandana, ruthlessly. That's where that line came from. You see. Where's Ruth? We said we can't. So anyway, but I won't start launching into all of this right now. I do want to say one thing that many of us were influenced in radio by such greats as Bob and Ray. I particularly was a great fan of Bob and Ray's, and I just want to make a note here that Ray's passing was duly noted by my friends and myself. I used to listen to that show when they were in New York. They did a show on WNEW every morning from 6 till 10. And my mom and I were great, great fans of Bob and Ray. And we used to record the show on an early tape recorder. I think it was a paper recorder or something like that. And I actually saved excerpts from the funniest shows, which I crudely spliced together in my childish way with scotch tape and things. And I've had them copied over. And I have some very rare and wonderful moments from their live radio shows, including the breaking up of this newscaster that they used to, Peter Roberts used to break up all the time. Just wonderful. So I have about 4 or 5 years compilated of the best of the Bob and Ray radio shows. Which
compiled? Is that the word you're looking
for? Compiled, yeah. Which I'd love to share with you sometime and maybe your listeners.
That's another show.
Plus, I used to send little notes and things into them and they'd read them on the air. So I was really a great fan, and I loved Bob and Ray, and I'm sorry, it's just Bob now. But he's carrying on.
And I heard a radio commercial with Bob
and someone else. Bob and somebody. I did too. And I'm glad that he's carrying on.
They should use that, Bob and somebody.
Bob and.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bob and. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably his name.
But back to the Firesign Theater.
Okay.
That's not what I called it.
We're back.
Okay. But before we go any further, let's play Forward into the Past.
Let's play a game. Oh, that's okay.
Forward. Unfortunately, most of the wonderful pieces that Firesign Theater did are longer than this program is.
That's true.
This program used to be...
Just one side is longer than this program.
Well, this program used to be longer than most of the wonderful things that you did, and now most of the wonderful things you did are longer than this program. And nothing is as long as that last explanation. But at any rate, we have the 145
that was
done by Firesign Theater.
Before they banned 45s, it was, you know...
They banned the albums because they have more than one track.
Oh, I was talking about guns. Oh, you're talking about albums. Oh, yeah, right. That's right. You see, the 45s were the albums with the big holes in the middle, so if you shot at them, you could get a bullseye real easy, right?
Play it, Eric.
Pass the Lord and praise the ammunition. Pass the Lord and praise the ammunition. Pass the Lord and praise the ammunition.
Yes, the Veterans Tap Dance Administration proudly takes you forward into the past. Remember those good old days when your daddy and mommy were fighting the war that made you possible? Well, you know, they didn't do it alone. No, they did it on the radio with millions of people watching. And this is what they heard. Forward! Into the past!
Headquarters, headquarters, Moon, 40 Taurus.
Roger.
Sun, 29 Pisces, 59.
Roger. Roger?
What?
This one looks serious, Roger. Cancer is rising.
Then we'd better call Captain Equinox.
Captain Equinox, the deadliest foe of those who attest our island democracy. By day, Adolf Tree, a mild-mannered college professor. By night, Kiki, a mini-skirted habitué of Hollywood starstruck Sunset Strip. But twice a year, he's...
Captain Equinox!
Today's dumb story, Spies of the Broadway, but first...
Trust that dwarf. Come in. I'm the strange Dr. Weird. And you've just entered the vault of mindless fellowship.
Is it a hit or a miss?
What? Yes, yes, yes. The makers of Loose Blood presents the Aboriginal Amateur Hour. And here's your menial host, Major Arcana.
Round and round I go. Hey, hey, babe, we're on the wheel again. Hello, hello. But first, here's a word from Dribble.
Hi. I'm not a doctor, but I do look like one, and I'm being paid to ask you this important question.
Police state!
Police state!
Police state!
Help! It's the police!
Policemen, real policemen, it's policemen we'll become.
Who's number one?
Peacemen, yes, we're peacemen, even though we wear a gun.
It's all in fun.
Police state, where green rookies become hardened men in blue, where danger wears a diploma and crime gets taught the lesson it deserves. Listen now as the Federal Bureau of Marijuana, in cooperation with Crime Lord Magazine, presents challenge number 13, Roach Patrol at Police State.
End of song. The timeless story of the little people, striving to make a pie pond of tranquility in a dirty, self-conscious hamlet that accepts neither, but rejects both. Brought to you every day by Bree.
Bree, Bree, Bree! Clean, clean, clean! Cleaner than everything!
As you remember, Cookie, ejected from Dr. Dog's insane asylum, had just been driven out to the scene of the fire in Aubrey's stolen car. Only a few moments before, the Carrots and the Squirrels had formed a committee to flood the Mixville Breadworks before nightfall. And, in court, Norna voids to unlock the pent-up riddle of Blessed Father Erpo before we all reach the end of song.
Do pigs live in trees?
What? You live where I live, and I live where you live. Then we live where pigs live, in trees. Yes, we all live in trees, like pigs.
Right, Porky, and it's time again to play...
What?
The old family fun game that stunts the experts.
Yes, we're all pigs, 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 pigs. We all live in trees, like big, fat pigs. I'm a pig.
Welcome to the Whispering Yeast Hour. With the Whispering Yeast Symphonet, the famous Whispering Yeast All Animal Whistling Choir, and yours truly, Dwight Yeast. For their opening selection, the Whispering Yeast All Animal Whistling Chorus joins Maestro Urpil Sweeney in a rousing salute to reality.
Praise the ammunition, pass the Lord and praise the ammunition, pass the Lord and praise the ammunition.
Americans, ask yourselves these questions. Who's going to get your garbage, us or Tojo? Remember, only individual private citizens has the answer.
Like this week's 25-year war bond winner, Mrs. Beverly Yatamoto of Camp 13. She crocheted her entire month's allotment of garbage into a splendid barrage balloon.
So thumbs up, Beverly Yatamoto. Yeah, she remembered that garbage that goes bad comes back at our boys in baggies.
This is a transcribed service of the Veterans Tap Dance Administration.
Well, we're back.
Yes, yes, great fond memories.
I suppose we should credit the other members of your group.
Yeah, let's see. What were their names?
Peter Bergman.
Proctor. Oh, no, that's me. Peter Bergman. David Bergman. David, let me write them down here. Let's see. David Osman, Philip Austin, Peter Bergman, Philip Proctor. Yes, that's it. Those are the four guys.
So, okay, you four guys got together. You're doing radio, and... somehow you got a record contract.
Well, it happened.
Now this record that you that you put out was not like most of the records that Columbia Records was putting out at
Absolutely
the time.
Not.
It had very little. It wasn't like, you know, the Andy Williams and Andre Castellanets and the other things that Columbia Records was doing. What did they think they were getting with Firesign Theater?
Well, We got the record contract because Phil Austin had done a comedy single called Duckman. Dick and Bert, Dick Orkin and Bert Burtis had become very successful in
Chicken
Chicago
Man.
Doing with Chicken Man, which was syndicated and all that stuff. And so Duckman was an attempt to steal some of their thunder. And Austin did a duck voice or something on it. I don't know. I don't think I've ever even heard it. I think Austin destroyed all the copies of it. But a guy named Gary Usher, who was a producer at Columbia, he recorded him with that. And then when he learned that he was working with the Wizard of Oz, Peter Bergman, as he was known then, on Radio Free Oz, which was this endless counterculture talk show that Peter used to do from, I don't know, 10 in the morning, to 10 at night to 6 in the morning or something, that we all worked out on and jammed on, where the Fireside Theater actually came alive. It was actually originally called the Oz Firesign Theater, but Disney owned the rights to Oz, the name Oz, and all the Oz paraphernalia. And so, material, I should say. And so we had to call it the Firesign Theater. And Usher struck a deal with Bergman and us to do a record. And there's a lot of strange things that happened with me. I ended up back in New York at that time, and I got a phone call just when this relationship I was involved in had finally self-destructed from Bergman, saying that there are, I mean, literally at the moment where I said, now what am I going to do? The phone rang. It was Bergman. He said, there are two... There's a one-way ticket for you back to L.A. waiting at Columbia Records in New York, and get on the plane. It's leaving tomorrow. We're going to do a record with Columbia called Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him. And I said, okay, I'm on my way, and I left this New York life behind me and came out and we did
amazing.
The record.
Amazing.
Now, we had
now
gotten
he had a title.
Yeah, well, we had created the title because one of the things that we'd done on the radio show, we'd had some fame from this Radio Free Oz show because Peter was phenomenally successful with it. We did several live performances once the foursome had come together and started creating some kind of comic force that people responded to by basically improvising on an absurd premise and carrying it farther and farther and farther out. And people came with us. They followed us as far out as we would go with these things until we had them totally in outer space. We'd distort reality more and more and more, but within the context of something that was believable, like showing movies on the radio, for instance. And we acquired a certain amount of fame, so we did a performance of a thing called Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him, which was an absurdist play by an Eastern Bloc playwright. I think it was an unspecified, could have been Bulgaria, if I remember correctly. I played this Slavic or this East Bloc character, and we did an absurd play in kind of non-language and everything, and it was all about power. And where power came from, and taking power from the people who gave you power, and unplugging from the power source. And it was, in essence, a prognostication of the incredible populist revolution which happened most recently. And it's interesting to me that the electrician turned out to be Lech Walesa, you see, in of all places, Poland.
Well, back to the original thrust of the question, was Columbia surprised with what they got?
Was
that what they were expecting?
No, they didn't expect anything. And the wonderful thing was that because of a man whose first name is John, whose last name I can't remember right now, but who has gone on to produce some excellent records, who was kind of a champion of the Firesign Theater, we got a spoken arts recording contract. We were not signed as, what would you call it, pop artists, but as under spoken arts contract, which allowed us to have unlimited use of studio. We didn't have to pay for studio. That's one of the reasons why the pieces are so intricate, you see, and why we were able to eke a living out of producing this material, which at first, of course, did not have a large audience, but then was able to grow because it was such a small nut for us to return to the record company. They could afford to continue to publicize us.
I was in New York at the time, and WBAI played them very...
Yeah,
very
well, you know, at that time, the place, we had this line about in one of our, I think in the second record, that we have a lot of things in this country of ours and a lot of places to put them in. Well, we don't have as many places to put our things in now as we used to, but at that time, the FM radio network, free programming, was open enough that they could play material such as ours, especially long pieces of material. In fact, they yearned for long pieces of material.
So they could go to the bathroom.
That's right, that's right. And, you know, so the disc jockey could go off and go out and maybe smoke a joint outside or something. These were interesting times. There were times where people were attempting to unplug themselves from the sources of power and discipline and all of the generational lessons that we'd been propagandized with.
It was before the party was raided.
Yes, it was the pre-populist party revolution, in a sense. It was like getting ready for the party. And I don't want to analyze it too greatly because we've lived through it, and here we are still moving it forward and still part of it. As long as you're alive, change is the only thing to do. And, you know, we change, so we must hopefully change the world for the better. And that's just the way it is. And it's been great to be able to be culturally a part of it because these records were accepted, were played, and were listened to by people who had an open mind to what we were playing with, which were social, satirical ideas in the context of radio, or I should say, that which allows for the power of the imagination and of the associative mind, what I call the associative mind, which is allowing the subconscious to be more in contact with the conscious because you're making little associations that get into dream.
Well, it was radio, but I think it differed from radio in
the psychedelic.
Well, no, but it differed from radio in that radio, you can pretty much understand radio the first time you hear it.
Yeah,
most of the
right.
Firesign Theater records, you would listen to it the first time and you'd go, mm-hmm. I wonder what kind of sense that's going to make to me on the 5th or 10th or 15th hearing. And on the 5th or 10th or 15th hearing, it would begin to make a different kind of sense, certainly
that's
from
right.
what it did on the first hearing.
Yeah, it was interesting that we were able to create material that people would not, well, some people would just throw it away. It became a flying saucer, an unidentified flying object. You know, like, what's that? This is end. But other people said, wow, did I miss something? Or that was so interesting, or that was so rich, or I was laughing and I missed something. And they would go back to it. And that was our premise. We wanted to make it so jam-packed and so full. After all, it's a record. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody's going to buy a record, they don't want to listen to it once and then have it in their heads, or, you know, just listen to it to memorize certain routines and then that's it. We wanted it to be as rich as a book, something that you could go back into later, or as rich as a Shakespearean play, something that was full of levels of meaning and intentions, but that basically, superficially, took you from point A to point A again.
Now, I know that John Cleese has often said that it drives him crazy when people are constantly coming up to him and throwing Monty Python lines at him and saying, oh, John, do the funny walk.
Because he's tall and he can't duck easily.
That's right. True. But what was it like for you guys when people would, I'm sure it happened.
When? They did it today to me. Today I was, you know, working, doing looping and dubbing for Die Hard 2, or Die Harder, as I think they're going to call it. And I was in a darkened room with people yelling lines at me. I mean, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. We all enjoy it. But the thing that interested and amused us when 20-some-odd years ago, well, they were all odd years, actually, 25 years ago, when Firesign was first beginning, and we began to taste the results of this odd success. You know, after all, we were making records. We weren't standing in front of people and getting an immediate response. This group started first on the radio and then with phonograph records, so that people would come up to us and throw lines at us. And it was almost like, where did you hear that? You know, I don't remember you coming and sitting in front of us and us doing this material.
I have the same thing here. I always, whenever somebody says that they, whenever somebody reacts to something that I did on the radio,
right.
I do this in a little room all by myself, and it's like, you know, were you eavesdropping?
That's the power of these media forms, you see. And it was wonderful also to find out what lines they thought were funny. She's no fun, she fell right over. That was a throwaway line, you know. And one of the lines that was created because all of our pieces were carefully scripted by us. And then we go in and improvise them when we were recording them. That was the performance, you see. And as we would lay that stuff down on tape and listen to it back and all that, we would find, oh my gosh, look, this one little moment we improvised and stretched out. We called them rubber band moments. And it became like a 5-minute bit. It's really funny. Let's throw away the next three pages and see if we can make that fit in with this next bit. And blah, blah, so that the pieces would grow organically out of the inspiration of performance at the moment that we were making the recordings. That's why most of our records never had an ending as we were writing them. We'd go in and start recording it before we knew where the piece was going to end, even though we had an overview.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about the records, is that for the first four or five records, the end of the first one has something to do with the beginning of the next one.
Yeah, that was semi-intentional, you know. It was, for us, especially in the first part of the body of our work, the pieces were continuations of where we were in the society and how we viewed it and how we saw the progress of personal, individual liberation from these propagandistic ties that we'd all come out of. I can't be too articulate about it because in that lies madness. I mean, you know, but basically what we're doing was, let's say, just parodying the social structure that existed at the time from within and from without. Because we were already part at that time of the revolution, of the sense of change, of the underground culture, and yet we were still making fun of the underground culture because we didn't want to have any icons.
But see, all of this sounds very high-minded and pretentious, whereas it was...
It
was very funny.
It was very funny. We were doing it to amuse ourselves, you see. And it so happened that we could escape from some of the terror that we felt and the imprisonment that we felt by making fun of it. Mm-hmm. You see, it's like the Hopis and their mudheads, you know, who can make fun of the authority figures and of the what do they call those wooden figures that they make, the icons of their gods? Anyway,
Chuck.
Chuck and Bob, you know, Big Daddy and all that. But the Hopis could make fun of these. The Hopis were the pressure reliever. They were the jesters, you see, the court jesters. And that's what the fire sign was actually called at one point in the 70s, the court jesters of the rock generation.
Well, you see? We are running out of time.
Yeah, of course.
And
we didn't hear any other records, did we?
No, but... The next obvious question is, what happened? Why aren't you still making records that are still on?
I think it ran its course. Frankly, I don't say that there isn't another record in us to do. That there may not be a record for the '90s or something like it. But at the time we did records, records were the revolutionary force.
Yeah.
You see, and records are as you say, something which can be experienced in the dark, and you don't have to sit in front of a machine or anything. You know, it can be a tape or a record that you carry with you in your ears or in a darkened room with other people. It is something that is easy to listen to and easy to experience, and you can do it whenever you want to, without, you know, having to go through a lot of brouhaha, ha 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 ha. And now a lot of that has been replaced. The record doesn't have the same force, even in music, that it used to have.
No, this is true.
Because it created a new medium by its success. It began, the record companies got huge, and popular artists became huge icons, and
people started taking different drugs.
Well, that too, but you know, it's not so, again, all these things are only manifestations of social change, you see, and the pendulum swings this way and that way and the other way, and basically in terms of entertainment, people become cliches, and then they can be exploited, you see. But Fireside Theater, I don't think has ever become a cliche, and I hope we never will.
Well, that music means we're out of time. Unfortunately, this half hour has just flown. It has been wonderful to have you with us. Before we get any further, the Fireside Theater's great classics are now available, or at least becoming available, mm-hmm. on Mobile
CD.
Fidelity on CD.
That's right.
And they sound even better.
Well, that's because they're completely remixed, and we can hear all of the little improvs that we did in the background more clearly, which amuses us as well.
So run out and get, I think we're all bozos on this bus.
Yeah, and How Can You Be Into Place at Once? And Rhino Records has a lot of our more recent stuff in CD as well. And listen for Vinnie Gumba singing Rapidis on your local pop radio station.
Well, you can listen for it on this radio station because I will find a way to get it in.
Okay. Well, maybe I can come back and talk some more if you're.
Well, that'd be great, and we will do that Bob and Ray show.
Oh, I'd love to share that with your listeners.
Next week, Ack! Ack! Talk to them first.
Yes. Well, Bob is now doing what people do on radio, which is moving away from the microphone
to find what I'm doing next week. Next week, Marty Feldman.
Ah, another dead man.
Some rarely heard English recordings from
God bless him.
Written by the Python people, and it's really terrific stuff. So until next week, this is your host, Bob Plaster, thanking you for listening, and thanking you for being with me, Philip Proctor.
And thanking you for having another baby.
And reminding you all to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.